Welcome, American Hauntings listeners. It's Troy with a special bonus episode of the podcast. That's sort of a good news, bad news episode. First, the bad news. Well, for American Hauntings anyway. My official Facebook page has been hacked, and I no longer have access to it. For now, I think scheduled posts will keep appearing, but then I have no idea what happens after that. I'm working on it with Facebook, but they tell me it can take days, weeks, even months to get back. So that's bad, but it actually gets worse. When the hackers took control of the page, they also got access to my advertising account. And since the ads we place on Facebook are how a lot of you see what's coming up, that's also bad because we can't advertise anything. But again, it still gets worse. When they got control of the ad account, they also got control of my payment information and basically drained the company bank accounts of a lot more money than a small business can afford. So yeah, that's pretty bad. I may get some of it back, but if I do, I have no idea when it'll be. But the good news of this episode is that you're just about to get an unexpected Thanksgiving ghost story. More bad news, I'm going to ask you to sit through some upcoming events first and ask if you would please, please consider helping us spread the word about them since we've been limited by what's happened. So I'll just number them off and just ask if you'll help us if you can. This Saturday, November 23rd, we have a special art pop-up at the American Oddities Museum in Alton. We have a local artist coming in who goes by Itchy, and he has some really cool stuff, as you might expect from the name. And you can see some of it linking through my Instagram page. His pop-up sale will run from 12 to 5 that day, and you really should check it out. Secondly, we just started our big holiday book sale, and we're offering 20% off all the books you buy if you use the promo code HOLIDAY when you check out. And also, if you spend $25 or more, you'll get a free gift bag for your books. And they are pretty cool. Little canvas bags with Happy Holidays from American Hauntings on it and a little skull wearing a Santa hat. You're supposed to go, ah, that's cute. Well, anyway, you can order books at AmericanHauntingsBooks.com. And just be sure to use that promo code HOLIDAY. And that sale ends on December 14th. And as I think I've mentioned, we have a really big event at the American Oddities Museum on November 30th from 12 to 5. My new book, Devil's Carnival, will officially be out that day, and I'll be signing books. Plus, we'll have a brand new exhibit opening in the museum, the biggest one we've ever done. And we'll also have a free performance by Freak Show Deluxe, friends of ours who keep sideshows alive in the modern day. It's going to be great. So come by, get the new book, see the show, check out the museum, and lend us your support. It's a Small Business Saturday. And finally, the full page for the Haunted America Conference will be up and running this week. All the speakers, after-hour events, etc. And the big thing I want to mention is that vendor spaces go on sale in just a couple of weeks on December 2nd. I've had a lot of people asking, but I'm a little at a loss as to how to remind them that vendor spots are going on sale a month before the conference. So the general admission tickets are on sale starting January 6th. So anyway, that's all. I promise to get to the story. And I want to thank all of you in advance for the help and the continued support you've given us over the years. This has been a big setback for American Hauntings, as you might imagine. Aside from our Patreon support, the podcast is pretty much just funded out of my pocket, so I didn't feel completely out of line getting on here and asking for your help. So anyway, thank you. Thanks for your past support, and thanks in advance for anything you can do to help us spread the word about upcoming events and helping us try and bounce back from these losses. So with all that said, though, let's have a Thanksgiving ghost story. The Hotel Del Coronado in San Diego is one of the most beautiful hotels in the country, and some say one of the most haunted, and I'd have to agree. It's long been one of my favorite spots with its elegant Victorian design, sandy beaches, and colorful history. The story of the resident ghost has long been an integral part of the hotel's past, and it involves a young woman who checked in there on Thanksgiving Day, 1892, and never checked out. but that young woman may not haunt this hotel alone. Welcome to American Hauntings, the podcast dedicated to the history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of American history. And welcome to a special episode where Troy gets to admit how stupid he is by letting his accounts get taken down by hackers. I'm Troy, and I wrote, performed, and produced this episode because I wasn't going to ask Cody to have to deal with it. This season, we've been in search of America's murder houses, but in this episode, I'm going to take you to a haunted hotel instead for a ghost story that's tied to Thanksgiving. So enjoy, and thanks again for listening. In the middle 1880s, all of Southern California was in the middle of a real estate boom. To draw people to the San Diego area, railroad magnate Elisha Babcock and Hampton L. Story of the Story and Clark Piano Company decided to build a luxury seaside resort on Coronado Island, which was just offshore in San Diego Bay. The new hotel would be located on the island's southernmost point along a wide sandy beach. In those days, the island could only be reached by boat, so this just made the place seem all the more exclusive. Work on the hotel began on 28 acres of beachfront property in March 1887. The original plans called for just under 400 rooms, so when it opened, it was the largest resort hotel in the world. And today, it's even bigger. With additions that have been made over the years, there are now 679 rooms, plus an additional 79 cottages and villas. It's now far beyond what the builders could have ever imagined. The suites in the original structure, now known as the Victorian Building, were luxurious, and the hotel was the first on the West Coast to be wired for electricity. There was a tea garden, tennis courts, and a saltwater pool, even though the ocean was just steps away. Perhaps the most outstanding feature of the hotel was the 23,500 square foot main dining room with its high arched pitched pine wood paneled ceiling. The entire exterior of the resort was painted pristine white and was capped by red roofs. And if it looks familiar to any of you Disney park lovers out there, it's the inspiration for Disney's Grand Floridian Hotel. The cost of the construction far exceeded the initial estimates. It turned out that all the necessary materials had to be brought from outside the area, including lumber and workers. Plus, fresh water had to be pumped over the island from the city. A hotel was started with the best of intentions, but a real estate bust that occurred late in the construction threatened to sink the entire endeavor. At the last minute, though, sugar mogul John D. Speckles offered a welcome infusion of cash, and by 1890, he'd bought out all the other partners. The hotel opened to great fanfare in February 1888, and its popularity was well established before the 1920s. It had already hosted Presidents Harrison, McKinley, Taft, and Wilson, and the hotel was later visited by Franklin D. Roosevelt, Dwight D. Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, Lyndon B. Johnson, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, George H. W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama. By the late 1920s, the Hollywood stars and starlets discovered that the Dell, as it was often called, was the in place to stay. Many celebrities made their way south to party during the era of Prohibition and used the Hotel Del Coronado as their personal playground. Tom Mix, Tallulah Bankhead, Rudolph Valentino, Charlie Chaplin, Mary Pickford, Mae West, and Ramon Navarro were a few of the many actors who stayed at the hotel during weekend getaways. Other notables have included Charles Lindbergh, Thomas Edison, Vincent Price, Babe Ruth, and L. Frank Baum, who is said to have used the Queen Anne-style turrets as inspiration for the description of the Emerald City of Oz. The hotel also became the backdrop for many films, most notably the 1959 Marilyn Monroe, Jack Lemmon, and Tony Curtis movie, Some Like It Hot. During World War II, the hotel was used to house Navy pilots and the families of officers. And by the end of the war, the neglected hotel had started to age. And while millions were spent to refurbish it, a new owner in 1963 started making plans to tear it down. But he changed his mind at the last minute and remodeled and expanded it instead. It remains today as one of the most beautiful resorts on the West Coast, and one that is home to several ghosts. The iridescent eyes of a woman have startled many guests who stay in room 3312. Many have awakened in the night to find those eyes staring at them from the other end of the bed. Other visitors have experienced flickering lights, had the windows open and closed by themselves, have seen the curtains move when there's no breeze blowing into the room, have heard unnatural sounds within the walls, or had the bed shake beneath them. Others have only felt a general restlessness and anxiety, but it's been bad enough they've asked to switch rooms. Room 3312 is so haunted that its strangeness even filters out into the corridor outside. Occasionally, passersby have seen unusual light shining under the door. In the summer months, maintenance workers have found it almost impossible to keep the window screens of the room from falling off. There's also something about the room that causes the light bulb at the bottom of the nearest stairwell to burn out after only 1 or 2 days, requiring it to be replaced. It's been said that room 3312, which was once numbered 502, was the room where original owner Elisha Babcock kept his mistress. Legend has it that she became pregnant and committed suicide one night. Of course, this story is only a rumor. It's never been confirmed because shortly before the police arrived to investigate her death, her body mysteriously disappeared. Room 3502 is another haunted suite with a ghostly story that involved a VIP guest. During a visit to the hotel by Vice President George H.W. Bush in the 1980s, one of the agents from his Secret Service detail was assigned to that room. During the course of a single evening, the agent experienced moving drapes, cold spots, and a strange light that manifested in the room. At one point, he called down to the front desk to complain about the loud talking and the incessant stomping about by guests on the floor above him, only to be told there was no one in that room. When he later awoke to see an apparition in his own room, he finally asked to be moved somewhere else. And the staff was happy to do so because so many of them have had their own encounters with phantom guests. One of the hotel's first caretakers has been seen in the dining room, apparently testing the floor with his cane. A Victorian-era woman has been seen dancing in the ballroom. The ghost of a very sick young girl who was rushed to the hospital in 1950 has returned to roam the hallways looking for the doll she left behind. There are also ghosts of a little boy and girl, their identities unknown, who have been seen throughout the property. They're spotted in period clothing, laughing and playing or running up and down the stairs. Many employees have spied a dark form moving behind the locked doors of the lobby shops after hours. One shop manager arrived to discover that all the books on a lower shelf near the cash register had been moved around. Some were on their sides, while others had been scattered on the floor and were lying open and face down. Staff members have even seen souvenirs fly off the shelves in some of the stores. There seem to be many spirits at Hotel Del Coronado, but none of them are as famous as the ghost of Kate Morgan. She arrived at the hotel in 1892, and she simply never left. Hotel guests and employees believe that most of the paranormal events that occur at the hotel can be connected to Kate. Witnesses report flickering lights, dramatic shifts in room temperatures, odd scents, unexplained voices, the sound of strange footsteps, and objects that move about by themselves. And some have even seen Kate Morgan herself. But who was this mysterious woman? And how did she end up spending eternity at the Hotel Del Coronado? On November 24th, 1892, Thanksgiving evening, a pale, pretty woman in her mid-20s walked into the luxuriously furnished hotel lobby of the Hotel Del Coronado and asked for a room. She was later described by the coroner as being 5'6" with a fair complexion, 2 moles on her left cheek, black hair, and brown eyes. During her stay, hotel employees, many of whom had frequent interactions with Kate, reported that she appeared ill and very unhappy. A woman traveling alone in those days, especially with no luggage, was frowned upon and viewed with suspicion, but the young woman told the desk clerk that she'd been traveling with her brother, Dr. M.C. Anderson. He'd gotten off the train in Orange, but would be arriving soon. She had no suitcases because he had been holding the claim tickets. The sympathetic clerk believed her and registered her under the name of Mrs. Lottie A. Bernard of Detroit. She was shown to room 302 on the north side of the building. And over the course of the next few days, she frequently asked the staff about her brother's arrival, but he had not checked in and he'd left no message for her. Meanwhile, it had become clear to the staff that the woman was sick. Several employees, including the pharmacist who ran the hotel's drugstore, suggested she visit the hotel physician, but she assured them she knew what was wrong with her. She suffered from neuralgia, a sharp shooting pain that follows the path of a nerve. It's frequently due to irritation or damage to the nerve, such as the pain that continues after a case of shingles. She explained that her brother would treat her as soon as he arrived. Later, though, when the hotel manager pressed her further, she confessed she had stomach cancer. That, she said, was the real source of her pain. The manager also discreetly asked her how she planned to pay for her stay, and she told him to wire G.L. Allen in Hamburg, Iowa. Well, whoever that person was, he did send the money. In fact, it arrived by wire on the morning that her body was discovered. Despite her poor health, Lottie took a trip to downtown San Diego on November 28th, where she purchased a handgun and some ammunition. That night, she was seen by other guests on the hotel veranda, looking out across the bay. And that was the last time she was seen alive. 5 days after she checked in, a hotel electrician found her body on a small set of stone steps leading down to the beach. She had a gunshot wound to her head, which the San Diego County coroner later determined was self-inflicted. A search of her hotel room revealed no personal belongings. In fact, there was nothing to identify the, quote, beautiful stranger, except the name she used when she registered, Lottie A. Bernard from Detroit. After her death, police sent a sketch of her face and information about her death to newspapers and police stations around the country in the hope that someone could shed light on the dark mystery surrounding the suicide of the unknown girl at the Coronado Hotel. Eventually, Lottie Bernard was identified as Kate Morgan, originally from Iowa. She had been born there as Kate Farmer in 1865, and on December 30th, 1885, she'd married a man named Tom Morgan. Reportedly, Morgan was a gambler who may have made his living gambling on the railroad. At the time of her death, Kate was employed as a maid by the L.A. Grant family of Los Angeles, working under the name Kate Logan. She told the Grants and her co-workers that she'd fled from her husband, who was a degenerate gambler. Other than that, she never talked about her past. On November 23rd, she had told the Grants she was going to take a one-day trip to San Diego. And when she didn't return, they contacted the police, who in turn connected her disappearance with the newspaper reports about the beautiful stranger at the Hotel Del Coronado. Now, why had Kate gone to San Diego? And what was the true story of her illness? Well, no autopsy was ever performed. Some answers may have been in the large stack of papers that Kate burned in the fireplace in her hotel room before she killed herself, but we'll never know. It turned out there were no unclaimed suitcases at the train station, so there were no clues there either. As to the source of her illness, an anonymous, prominent physician suggested in the San Diego Union that the early symptoms of pregnancy were almost identical to stomach cancer. His conclusion was that Kate had gone to the hotel to use medications found in her room, including camphor and quinine pills, to try and induce a miscarriage. And there may have been something to this suggestion. After the inquest, a gentleman came forward to say that he had seen Kate arguing with a man en route on a train to San Diego. The witness said that the man disembarked before reaching the city, and Kate continued to the Hotel Del Coronado by herself, where she eventually took her own life. Could this mysterious man have been the person who'd gotten her pregnant and then, after a final quarrel, abandoned her? Given the national notoriety of the case and with no family to object, Kate's body was placed on display at the local mortuary, Johnson & Company, where it was kept while officials decided what to do with her remains. Eventually, Kate was buried in Mount Hope Cemetery, just east of downtown San Diego. But her spirit has never left the Hotel Del Coronado. Since her death, paranormal activity has been reported in the room Kate stayed in during her 1892 visit, room 3327, and in other areas of the hotel. She's been encountered literally hundreds of times over the years by a wide variety of guests and staff members. It's said that personal items will often go missing in the room and then turn up somewhere else. Guests have awakened in the morning to find the room has been ransacked as if by intruders, with all their belongings picked up and tossed around, even though the room has been locked all night. They've heard the sounds of disembodied footsteps in the dark and smell the flowery perfume that comes and goes with no explanation. Sudden drops in temperature are common, as is having the linens suddenly jerked off the bed. The television and ceiling fan turn on and off by themselves, and occasionally guests will return to the room after dinner to find the faucets have been turned on in the sink and the bathtub. And sometimes, Kate herself is seen. A pretty dark-haired woman in late 19th century clothing will sometimes be spotted in the middle of the night. Or if not seen, she still visits anyway. Guests will enter the room and find an impression of a person was left behind on the bed. During one particularly active period a few years ago, the housekeeping staff would only clean that room if they did so in pairs. Kate doesn't always stay in her room. During her time at the hotel in 1892, she made liberal use of the lobby, veranda, and dining hall, and her ghost continues to follow that same route. She's been encountered in the third floor hallway, in the garden, and on the beach, and on the stone staircase where she ended her life. Even when she doesn't appear, some guests seem able to sense her. They'll occasionally say they feel as though someone is watching them. Others report feeling overwhelmed by hopelessness and despair when they walk down the stairs where Kate's body was found. Kate Morgan is, without a doubt, the most enduring spirit of this grand hotel, and she continues to leave behind an impression on this place more than 125 years after her tragic death. And that brings us to the end of this bonus episode of the podcast. And I wanted to say thank you again for listening and sticking with me to the end of the show, even after all the embarrassing pleading in the beginning. I can speak for Cody and say that we really do appreciate you and hope you'll stick with us for the last few shows of season 8, the next of which is coming next week. You can reach us by email or on the Haunt line at 217-791-7859, or you can find us on social media at Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, and don't even bother with Facebook right now. Ugh. Take care, and we'll be back next week with a brand new episode.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.